The Emerald Ash Borer has arrived, and many communities in Iowa are getting ready. Getting ready by cutting down ash trees. This hour, we'll explore the other options. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day, and hundreds of ash trees have already been cut down in Ames, Cedar Rapids, Johnston, and other towns across the state. This hour, I'll talk with Mark Schauer, pest management expert for Iowa State University Extension. We'll talk about what your options are if you have an ash tree, or three or four, in your yard. Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron will also be here. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and this hour we're going to talk again about the Emerald Ash Borer. Communities all over the state are preparing for the Emerald Ash Borer, especially now that it has been found in Burlington, and a lot of communities are preparing by cutting down trees. Johnston is the latest community to cut down hundreds of ash trees around the city. We'll start the hour with Mark Schauer, who is a pest management expert for Iowa State University. Hello, Mark.
Hi, Charity. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, you're welcome.
Now, people see communities like Johnston, Ames, Cedar Rapids cutting down ash trees in preparation for this invasion, and I think a lot of people are worried. I think a lot of us should be worried. But why are all of these communities cutting down the ash trees right now, even though the ash borer hasn't gotten there yet?
Well, Charity, in Johnston's case, and I visited with them before the articles came out, we talked about the older dying trees, the ones that are dead or dying, and in the neighborhood that they were most concerned about, the Green Meadows neighborhood, there's some 90% ash trees that are public trees there. And that's a big number of ash trees, for one thing. And secondly, when he told me the number of trees that were actually going to be cut out, it was actually 60 instead of 100. So I think the there's a little bit of miscommunication there on that item. But what they want to try to do is decrease the number of unhealthy ash trees, because Emerald ash borer will go to those trees first instead of attacking the healthy ash trees. They look for the unhealthy trees.
And as these trees are being cut down, not just in Johnston, but in the other communities as well, it's an effort to increase the diversity of the tree population, right?
That's correct, because unfortunately, some of the people that did some early planting with the community tree canopies went what was available, went what grew well. An ash tree is one that grows really well. It can handle basically any type of environment you throw at it. And so it became more and more popular.
And let's now talk about our yards, because a lot of us have ash trees in our yards. And when we see communities making those decisions to cut down all of those trees, we start to worry about the trees in our yards. If we have ash trees in our yards, what do we need to be thinking about right now?
Well, the first thing, Charity, is not to worry about cutting them down. We could get years and years and years of benefits from those trees, the enjoyment, the beauty of those trees, before Emerald Ash Borer even comes close. Some estimates that people have of moving across Iowa in another 10 years or so are really just estimates. They're guesses. We have no idea knowing how quickly it can move or how slowly it will move. It may take 50 years for it to move across the state, and in that time, we will have enjoyed those trees. There is good news, though, as far as treatment for Emerald Ash Borer. For trees that are not infested, there are several products available to the homeowner for smaller trees that they could be using and actually prevent Emerald Ash Borer from attacking and killing that tree.
What kind of prevention are we talking about?
Well, it's a systemic insecticide that goes up into the tree and renders that tree immune, so to speak, to Emerald Ash Borer. It will kill anything that's there. If Emerald Ash Borer starts feeding in low numbers, it will kill those, but it will also prevent any borers from being successful in the tree. And again, help me, or I want to remind you, Charity, that we don't even think about doing preventive treatment until we know that emerald ash borer has been confirmed within 15 miles from where that tree is.
So this might be something that homeowners in Burlington should be thinking about right now.
Oh, definitely. The Forest, DNR Forest Bureau went through Burlington just recently, and they had their whole crew go through, and it was part of the Radio Iowa news release today that they think approximately 40% of the ash trees in Burlington are showing signs and symptoms of EAB. Doesn't mean 40% of the trees have EAB. They're just showing signs and symptoms. It could be something else. But definitely homeowners in Burlington and the surrounding areas should consider treatment if they have a healthy ash tree.
Is there something you can do if you are already seeing emerald ash borer damage on your ash tree?
Excellent question. If the canopy, they say if the canopy is less than 30%, showing signs and symptoms, it's very likely that they could reverse that and save that tree. If it's more than that, probably not. And keep in mind that if there are dead branches on the tree and there's maybe 10 or 20% of the canopy that's been infested, and we do go ahead and use some kind of curative treatment there, that those 10 or 20% of the branches will have to be removed because those branches specifically won't grow back out.
All right. And we can look at other states. And one of the states that suffered a lot of losses of ash trees is Michigan. And the ash borer, when it got there, it basically moved across the state in the course of a decade. And it destroyed, I believe, millions of ash trees in the state of Michigan. But Iowa is not like Michigan. Tell me how we can create a plan or come up with an idea of how quickly the ash borer might move across Iowa.
Well, in Michigan's case, Charity, they had people moving it inadvertently in firewood. It's a very recreational state, a lot of outdoor activities, camping, whatnot. And so they moved it here and there, and it wasn't really the emerald ash borer itself that moved. The beetle actually could only move perhaps 2 miles flight away from where it was. And that's a long shot in my mind, more like a half mile to a mile if it really wants to get out and fly away. And so in that consideration, emerald ash borer was moved by man. In Iowa, we've had a lot of communications, a lot of outreach. Our press has been excellent in helping us to get the word out. And many, many people call us at Iowa State and other DNR and the Department of Ag with questions about either bugs they've seen or trees that they've seen symptoms on. And we're able to go back and visit those places or look at the insect specimens and determine that it has not been, for the most part, emerald ash borer. So we've got a jump start, I guess, over Michigan and some of the states like Ohio and Indiana, where they've been inundated with this pest. Once they found it, they started looking for it. It was everywhere, and they stopped moving firewood. Well, we have been limiting firewood movement in the state for at least a couple of years here, and the nursery stock has been limited in Iowa for probably 5 or more years, thanks to the Iowa Nursery and Landscape Association.
Well, and I've talked with DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh about the emerald ash borer in the past, and he says because Iowa is not as densely forested as Michigan, we just don't have as many trees, that might also help us with not having the emerald ash borer migrate as quickly.
That's definitely an advantage. You know, we could be thankful for the corn and beans that are out there and all the variety we do enjoy across the state, but we don't have a lot of forested area that are contiguous across the state.
But once the ash borer gets into a community like Burlington, the trees are pretty close together.
Yep, unfortunately they are. And where the homeowner, where the tree was that the homeowner asked for assistance with is in an area that's very forested, and that insect can move from tree to tree very easily.
All right, so I have an ash tree, a very large old ash tree in my yard. I live out in the country in the middle of corn and bean fields, so right now I'm not going to be worried. Living in town, though, where a lot of other people have ash trees, if I have a number of ash trees in my yard, do I need to maybe consider trying to diversify?
Well, yeah, that would be a good idea if some of those ash trees are not healthy. If it's a site that was a poor backfill site when they established the community years ago and the trees have reached their maximum size and they're starting to decline, that would be an option. Again, I wouldn't go and have people cut down their ash trees. One thing to keep in mind, though, Charity, is that when you come into the treatment regimes for emerald ash borer, you are limited on how many ash trees you could treat per acre according to label directions. So,
and why is that?
It's just there's only the limit. There's a limit on each product label that says you can only treat so many trees per acre. Otherwise, you're going against the label. You're putting too much of the product, possibly get into water supplies, groundwater, or other concerns. So they've limited that. So if you've got a yard that's got 10 trees and all 10 are ash, and you have a half an acre lot, you might only be able to treat two or three of those trees instead of all of them with one method where you're pouring insecticide mixture around the base of the tree, for instance, or using a granular. You may have to have a commercial arborist come in and inject the other trees to protect them. So there's got to be a strategy involved here.
I can imagine people listening to you right now and thinking, pouring insecticide into the ground, this doesn't sound like a good idea no matter what kind of tree you have. What are the possible ramifications of pre-treating ash trees like this as far as other things in the environment?
Well, they've done a very good job, I think, of the products that are available for homeowners to use or for the commercial arborists to use. Don't move. Once they're in the soil, once they're around the base of that tree, they're in that specific zone around that tree, and they're not going to be washed out. Our concern is people over-treating, putting too much on top of the ground and ahead of a rainstorm, for instance, and it moving away from the site. So it's best if we are careful and not put too much around that tree or only use it when we need it. Obviously, we don't want to start treatment until we know it's 15 miles away and we have a healthy growing ash and it's in an area where we can treat it.
All right. So right now, really the only people that should be concerned are the people in and near Burlington.
Well, we also have Fairfield.
Okay.
Fairfield has been found. We found emerald ash borer in Burlington about mid-July, and we found it also in Fairfield, Jefferson County, at the end of July, the very first part of August. So if you draw a 15-mile circle around Fairfield and around Burlington and go out that way, the diameter, then that's where you're going to look for possible treatments.
All right. I'm talking with Mark Schauer, pest management expert for Iowa State University Extension. ISU Extension horticulturist Richard Duran is going to join us in just a moment. And, of course, you can join us with your questions about ash trees and any of the other plants and trees in your life. Give us a call at 866-780-9100 or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today on Talk of Iowa. With me, Mark Schauer, pest management expert for Iowa State University Extension. And Richard Duran is here now, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here today. And you can join our conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Or, of course, you can post your questions on our Facebook page as well. Again, 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And they can be questions about the emerald ash borer, your ash trees, or any of the plants and trees in your life. Give us a call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And Richard, what are some of the questions that you're getting most often right now on the hotline?
Well, we have some concerns about our plants as far as being dry. It has been extremely dry. Hopefully it will rain this weekend. That's my hope. As far as plant material, I'd be mainly concerned about recently planted trees or shrubs, anything in the last 2 or 3 years. Those definitely should be watered. Most of the larger trees, well-established trees, should be okay. But I would definitely make sure the recently planted trees and shrubs are watered. If you really do a good job as far as watering those slowly and deeply, they should be fine for probably 10 or 15 days.
All right. We did have a little bit of a sprinkle of rain across the state, but certainly not enough rain to actually get anything watered right now.
Right.
Bob is on the line now in Bettendorf. Hi, Bob.
Hi.
Hi there. What's your question?
Okay. On a walk the other day, I saw a older green ash that had all the classic signs except one. The emerald ash borer, the top was dying off. The woodpeckers are just having a field day on the bark. I didn't note any of the debore holes. But my question is, who would somebody contact to say, you know, this looks a little suspicious, possibly, probably isn't emerald ash borer, some other borer, but who would somebody normally talk to in their town?
Well, probably the best is the horticultural specialist in Bettendorf, Dwayne Gissel. Dwayne Gissel is at the ISU Extension Outreach Office. He would be the first person I would think of. And the other person is if you want to call the Department of Ag and Land Stewardship, the state entomologist. She also. What we do, though, is we'll send out, if we get a homeowner call about a tree, we'll talk to them about it, get notes, and if we are very concerned that an emerald ash borer possible tree, we actually have the Department of Ag and Land Stewardship people go out and visit those trees, those sites, and talk to the people.
Okay. Well, it's not my tree, but of course, it's my community. That's why I worry.
So please let Dwayne Gissel know, he will follow up with me and others. We'll have somebody come and look at it.
And I'm guessing that even the homeowners, even if they haven't noticed, would be happy to have someone else notice about their tree, because I'm sure everybody's going to be concerned about this.
Yeah, and that's how we found the tree in Burlington, thanks to a homeowner.
Shane is on the line next in Waverly. Hi, Shane.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I had a question about an ash tree. I had quite a large one that started to decline, and I found another borer. It's a ash lilac borer. Does that tend to attack a tree that may be distressed?
It does, Shane, and it usually attacks trees over a long period of time. It hits trees that are weakened, and then it will hit trees where they've been damaged one way or another by lawnmower or some other kind of injury to that tree. They'll start working on that tree, but usually when ash lilac borer hit the tree, it takes years and years to take it out. And it's just one of several native borers that are out there that help recycle our weakened trees.
Okay. I was just concerned about it because most of the canopy started to brown in June. I have taken the tree down, but I didn't know, the other ashes on my acreage would be susceptible.
Not necessarily if they're growing on a good site. It's just maybe that one tree, Shane.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Shane, thanks a lot for your call. And we're going to move away from the emerald ash borer for a few minutes. Dan is on the line next from Des Moines. Hi, Dan.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
Okay, we've got some orchids that we bought from a local store, and they've dropped their leaves. What do we do with them?
So you're saying they're basically bare?
Right now, it's just a stem sticking up about 18 or 19 inches.
But no foliage?
No.
Possibly they could have died. The only thing you can do is basically wait and see. Water them when you need to.
Okay.
And see what happens. But I would be concerned if you have no foliage whatsoever that they may have died.
Well, the stem seemed, the people at the store said that, you know, we can cut it back at a point.
Well, you can remove everything that's dead, absolutely.
Okay.
But
should we cut it low or just cut it and keep watering it during the winter?
Well, you can remove anything that's basically dead.
Okay.
You can remove.
Okay.
But it can't stay like that for a prolonged period. So I would be fearful that the plants may have died.
Oh, okay.
But I would just leave it and water it correctly and wait a few months.
Okay, thank you. One more question. What about elephant ears that we We just planted three of them in the backyard, and they grew to 18 inches, and they're prolific. What should we do with those for the winter months? It's only been in for this one season.
Right. You can't overwinter that. One way of doing that is to wait until, just leave it outside until we have that first frost or freeze. That will basically destroy the foliage. Then at that point, I would dig it up. And basically, it has this rather large coconut-like structure. And that's the overwintering structure. Basically, kind of clean it up, cut off all the dead material. And then you want to bury that in a container and bury it in some wood shavings or possibly some peat, and then store it at room temperature, around 70 degrees.
In the house?
In the house, right.
Okay. And
but bury it in the middle of that material so that it basically doesn't dry out.
Okay, but water it?
Nope, not at all.
Okay.
No, you just basically put it in that, bury it, so it doesn't dry out basically when it's buried like that.
Okay, thank you very much. Oh, the good news is our tomato crop is healthy.
All right, great, Dan. Thanks a lot for your call. And you can join our conversation with your question at 866-780-9100. We've got a few lines open for you right now, so it's a good time to get your question in. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Donna is on the line next in Waterloo. Hi, Donna.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. What's your question?
Well, we planted quite a few hostas, about 20, 30 hostas, and then we've been gone for about 10 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
We tried to maintain the weeds around the hostas.
Mm-hmm.
They came back, so I'm wondering, can we use Roundup to kill the weeds, be careful about all the flowers around? And if we did that, when could I start putting more hostas in the area that we killed the weeds with Roundup?
Well, there are several ways to control the weeds. Obviously, one is simply hoeing and pulling.
Right.
You can use the Roundup, but you have to be sure that you don't get it on the hosta foliage. That's imperative.
Right.
Okay. So you can do it if you basically keep the Roundup off the hosta foliage. As far as replanting, I think in most cases you want to check the label always to make sure, because there are various Roundup products and some contain a second active ingredient, so make sure you read that label. But in most cases, if you're just using glyphosate, you can replant within like 2 weeks, no problem.
Say that name again.
Glyphosate is the active ingredient in the common ordinary Roundup. But some Roundup products have a second ingredient which may prolong that waiting period. So check the label.
Okay. Okay. So just read it. Basically, be a good reader.
Yes.
You'll
be fine.
And then I can divide some hostas, put them in the ground, and just keep watering them. It's not too late.
Well, if I was going to divide my hostas, I would do so early next spring.
Okay.
As they're just beginning to come out of the ground, emerge, that's the best time, a great time to do it. You can dig up the entire clump, take a sharp knife, a butcher knife, and cut that clump into sections. That's ideal. I would prefer to wait, especially this year with the dry conditions.
All right. Great. Thank you very much.
All right, Donna. Thanks a lot for your call. And next, let's go to Karen on the line in Martell. Hello, Karen.
Hello.
Hi. What's your question?
I planted a new arborvitae as a replacement in our windbreak this spring and have been, I thought, watering it somewhat regularly anyway, fairly regularly. And then since we started our dry spell, have watered it very regularly. But it's looking pretty brown in some areas. Do I have a guideline of when I give up on it, or is there any promise at all for future?
As long as it's at least partially green, I would not give up. And as far as watering, I would say in most cases, if you do a very good job where you water slowly and deeply, I would think the trees should be fine for probably a week or 10 days.
Okay.
So the key is to do it slowly and deeply. And I would keep on doing that as long as it stays dry, and that would be through September, October, into November if it stays dry.
Okay. Okay. All right. Well, I won't give up on it yet, and we'll see what happens.
Okay.
All right.
I would think by next spring you will know, because this winter, if it's in poor health, it probably won't survive, and by spring it'll be totally brown. So.
Okay. Sure.
And it's small enough, you probably won't even need a truck to pull it out.
That's exactly right. Okay. Thank you.
All right, Karen. Thanks a lot for your call. Next up, let's go to Tom in West Des Moines. Hi, Tom.
Good morning.
Hi. What's your question?
If I heard correctly, I think it was mentioned earlier that the insecticide for the emerald ash borer works better on smaller ash trees, and I kind of wondered how that's defined. We live in a townhome complex where there are several mature ash trees, so I didn't know if it was a trunk diameter or height or what metrics kind of go into that.
Yeah, Tom, the latest finding they have made with research at universities is that if you have an ash tree up to 20-inch diameter breast height, that's about 4.5 feet above the ground, you could use a homeowner product on that tree.
Oh, okay.
If it's a soil drench, and if you have a tree up to 12-inch diameter, you could use one of the homeowner granular products.
Okay, so 12-inch for the granular product.
And 20-inch for the soil drench, the bucket
drench
method.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and that's 4 feet above the ground?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, okay, that's very helpful.
All right, thanks a lot for your call, Tom.
Thank you.
Next up, let's go to Jeff in Dubuque. Hi, Jeff.
Hello, how are you doing today?
Good. What's your question?
Well, I have some hostas planted at my house, and they're getting kind of unruly, and I want to thin them out a little bit. And
okay.
I guess I'm wondering when is best to pursue that. Would I do it in the fall before I cut them back, or would I do it in the spring?
I would do it in the spring. And maybe contact neighbors and friends and see if they want some next spring, possibly. But I would do it definitely next spring.
Okay. And then before they start to come up would be best, or wait till they come up a little bit?
I would wait till they start to come up so you know exactly where they are, which ones you want to save, and which ones you want to remove.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. And you can join our conversation at 866-780-9100 or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Jim is on the line in Spencer. Hi, Jim.
Morning. Couple questions. First, I'm wondering about the chances of getting any good longevity out of a coffee plant that I would grow from a seed or possibly from a planting here in Iowa. I mean, indoors, obviously.
Yeah, you can grow it indoors, especially if you have like a greenhouse or artificial lighting. It's not going to produce much of anything indoors,
no.
But you could do it.
They will live. They'll
you can
stick around a while.
Right. It's not the easiest house plant to grow, but you can.
Okay. I need to move some ferns in my yard. Is this a good time or a bad time?
I would say I would prefer to wait again because the weather has been so dry in recent weeks. I would do it early next spring as soon as you start to see some fronds emerging from the ground.
Okay, now I think I got a house plant here that got Roundup on it somehow. It's been rather peaked for a number of years. If I repot that, do you think it might start to come back?
Well,
it's a little palm.
Okay. If it's in reasonably good condition, then I would pot it up. Use a well-drained potting mix. Give it good care. That's all you can do. But it really it depends upon the condition. If it's in very poor condition, it's probably not going to recover.
All right, Jim, thanks a lot for your call. And let's get to a question from Brent in Pleasanton. He has peach trees that are 8 to 12 inches tall and in pots. How can he get them through the winter?
Well, if he has several, my suggestion would be to take them and dig a hole in the ground and set the pots in the ground. And then place soil around the pots as if they were planted, but they're not. And then I would get some chicken wire fencing or hardware cloth, and I would put that around these little grouping of peach trees.
Because they would be delicious to a hungry deer, right?
Or rabbit.
Okay.
And that way they should be fine. And then next spring they can dig them up, and they can plant them whenever they wish.
All right. Sounds like a good plan. We will get back to answering your questions in just a moment. We're going to take a short break, but you have time right now to get on the line at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. So join us with your questions. You can also post on our Facebook page, Iowa Public Radio. I'm talking with Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist, and also Mark Schauer, pest management expert for Iowa State University Extension. If you have questions about the emerald ash borer, this would be a great day to ask those questions. But of course, we'll take your questions about any of the plants and trees in your life. 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, it's Horticulture Day, and we're talking about the plants and trees in your life, answering your questions with Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Duran and Mark Schauer, pest management expert for ISU Extension. And let's get back to the phones. John is on the line next in Davenport. Hi, John.
Hi. Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm. What's your question?
I have a moth orchid. I got it to bloom. It put forth the stems.
Mm-hmm.
The exotic plant manual said once the stems had finished blooming,
mm-hmm.
you should cut them off.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did that, and it's putting forth leaves, but how do I get it to bloom again?
Well, it will bloom eventually on its own. the main thing is it doesn't bloom constantly. There will be periods when it doesn't bloom. So the main thing is keep it watered. Water
yeah.
it properly, give it plenty of light, and eventually it will bloom again. No problem.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. And next go to Bill in Sac City. Hello, Bill.
Oh, hi, Charity and Richard and Mark. Thank you for taking my call. I'm on city council in Sac City, which is in west central Iowa, and I've taken an inventory of the ash trees in our city parks and encouraged planting other species in the areas where there is an open canopy.
Mm-hmm.
This is, of course, in anticipation of the emerald ash borer coming. And I thought of making this recommendation for the entire community. Is this a reasonable approach, or am I acting a little bit too much of a Chicken Little, the sky is falling type of person?
No, it's excellent that you've gone through and done a tree inventory. About what percent ash do you have in Sac City?
I don't know for the community as a whole, but there's probably 30-40% at least in our city parks.
Okay, and that's
we do have a lot of ash trees though scattered throughout the community though.
Okay, and then how many of those trees do you think are really growing well and healthy?
Most of them are.
Oh, good. Well, I'd still enjoy them, and as you have places to put other trees to diversify, just go ahead and start doing that and encourage the neighbors to do that as well.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, Bill. Thanks a lot for your call. Next, let's go to Jim in Grinnell. Hi, Jim.
Hi.
Hi.
Good morning. I have a flower bed that's a kind of triangular shaped, a perennial bed. It's 30 by 10 by 35 or something like that. And it has a mole that is running amok in there. And he won't go into the grass because I suppose the ground is too hard.
Probably.
But where I have my bed all mulched, he's probably like a mess. It's full of worms in there, I'm sure. But I don't want to necessarily poison because of other animals in my neighborhood. Is the mole a friendly problem or just a problem?
Well, he can be a nuisance. The mole can. As far as control, typically, if you want to actually control it, trapping is the best way of doing it. There are various traps. You can buy these at garden centers, hardware stores. But if you try trapping, you have to be persistent. You have to be patient. It's probably going to be a month, maybe longer, before you catch it. And you simply have to keep on moving the trap around until you finally do catch it. The good news.
Come to the surface?
No, he won't. He or she. No, they won't. So you have to keep on moving the trap around. The good news is they don't live in these huge families. So it's typically just one or two doing the damage. So the problem is that once you get rid of that one, you might have a neighboring mole move in. So it may not be a permanent solution.
There's no way to know where he came from or she came from, right?
No. They're just part of nature. They basically feed on earthworms and grubs and things like that. Because the ground in the flower bed is watered, that's probably why they're there, because the ground is soft.
All right, Jim, good luck with that. And let's get to some email questions. This is from Brian in Altoona. He says, with rain in the forecast next week, I'm hoping to sow a cover crop in part of my garden this weekend. I'm looking for hairy vetch seeds, but I don't know where to buy them. Do you have any good suggestions for where he might find something like that locally, as opposed to having to order it?
Locally, I'm not sure. They could try a garden center. If not locally, then over the internet, possibly Johnny Seed in Maine. They have a number of cover crops.
All right. So call around before you actually drive anywhere, right? This is from Corey. I had raised beds for the first time this year, and especially my cherry tomatoes did very well. As happens with smaller fruit, several tomatoes fell below the plant and decomposed over the last few months. I already plan to remove the plants once they stop producing and rake out the area. What else can I do to prevent volunteer plants next year and to prepare my beds for this fall and spring?
Okay. You may get a few volunteers next spring, but you can pull those out very easily, so no problem there. I probably wouldn't do much of anything except clean up the debris in the fall. Basically, pick it up, remove it, destroy it, and then just leave it till spring.
All right. And one more email question right now. This is from Maria. This is about an orchid. There's a vendor at the Iowa City Farmers Market, and she's advised me about an orchid that I bought at a local store. Thus far, her advice is spot on. The flowers lasted 3+ months and then died. However, new growth of leaves tells me, with advice from the above, that my plant is alive and resting. So that was her advice to the person who was concerned about their orchids earlier on. Let's get back to the phones. John is on the line from Des Moines. Hi, John.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I've had a mature oak tree in our yard, and last fall, we bought our house last fall, and the people said they had another oak tree in this spot down by the front, and then they had to take it out, and they weren't really specific about why. And then another oak tree in the yard had a limb on it that maybe, the last fourth of it, like 10 or 15 feet or so, was dead, but I wasn't too worried about it. But then that was in the last fall. Then this spring and summer, the rest of the limb seems to be dying, and I'm just kind of worried. Does this mean is my tree doomed, or what can I do about it?
Okay, it's just one branch in the entire tree.
Yeah, it's one. It's at the trunk. It's maybe 15 inches in diameter, and the whole thing is like 40 feet long, and it's got other side branches going out of it. So yeah.
Okay, but the rest of the tree is fine, apparently. Correct?
It seems like it.
Okay. What I would do, I would have an arborist cut off that branch later on this fall, maybe in November at the earliest. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Have them prune it out, and that's the best you can do. If it were something like oak wilt, you would begin to see some symptoms again next year, but hopefully that's not the case. I'm thinking it's just one branch, maybe something damaged that branch. That branch has died, and so I would cut it out and basically wait and see what happens next spring and summer.
Okay. All right, I'll do that. Thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for your call. Next up is John in Beaverdale. Hi, John.
Hi. A lot of Johns this morning.
Yep.
I've got some iris rhizomes I want to plant this fall, and I wondered if there were any special caveats regarding the dryness.
No.
I know they late summer, early fall, keep the rhizome, a third of the rhizome above your soil, that kind of stuff. But any advantage to waiting later or get them in the ground now?
Okay, so you have those that are unplanted?
Yeah, I got them from Kelly Norris's place down in Bedford.
Okay. If we get some rain this weekend, I would do it early next week.
Okay.
Irises, bearded irises are tough. I don't worry about them too much, but I would get them in the ground next week if it rains this weekend.
Okay, great.
All right, thanks
Thank
a lot
you very
for
much.
Your call.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Next up, Joe in Solon. Hi, Joe.
Yeah, hi. I had a bad Japanese beetles infestation last year, and this time last year in September, I used some of the prescribed insecticide that I injected into the ground from the local nursery, and I didn't have any Japanese beetles this year, and I'm just wondering if they skipped a year or if it was successful or if I should be treating the same area with the same product again.
Well, you know, that insect is kind of spotty right now, and especially in your area, I think what you did is you may have knocked off the population that you had developing, a small population developing, and I'm glad you didn't have problems this year because we have not heard that from everybody across the state. But I'd encourage you just to wait and see until you get another population that might develop, and then you can do some curative action then.
Okay, so I should just not do anything this year and wait and see what happens next summer.
Exactly.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. And let's go back to an email question. This is from Amy. In my garden, ants are attacking the squash, tomatoes, cucumbers, and eggplants. Is this normal or is it because of the drought and that they have nothing else to eat? They're eating through the skins of everything and have killed a couple of plants. Can I do anything to save my produce?
Well, my thought is ants typically don't bother things unless something else initially causes the damage, possibly a bird or some other animal. If they go out there, let's say you have a ground squirrel or a bird, and they chew and break through that surface of the fruit, then they expose the flesh. And once you have that, then the ants may move in. So the main thing is I think something else caused the initial damage. If you have something that has basically been damaged, I would pick those fruit and remove them from the garden, and so maybe discourage the ants.
All right. This question is from Laura. We have poison ivy growing up through our foam flower and hosta. If I painted the leaves of the poison ivy with Roundup and protected the foam flower hosta leaves from the Roundup, would it die but keep the wanted plants alive?
I think you could do that. Basically, what I would do is probably get a foam-type paintbrush, and I would also get some stakes and maybe pin back my hostas so they're kind of out of the way, and then very carefully paint the foliage of the poison ivy with the Roundup.
And some gloves to wear while you do that.
Yes.
It's a really good idea, too.
Yes.
She also says, we have a corner of our lot that's overrun with poison ivy, but we have raspberries and various native shrubs also growing in that area. What would be the best way to eradicate the poison ivy there?
It's basically digging a Roundup. And so, again, just be very careful as far as applying the Roundup. Sprays kind of get out of control sometimes, so be very careful if you use a spray.
All right. Next, let's go to Larry on the line in Ames. Hi, Larry.
Hi.
Hi, what's your
question?
I'm
calling about peonies dying off. I planted 6 peonies in a mixed annual and perennial garden about 15 years ago. They're well established. Last year, one of them gradually died back, and I've got a second one that happened to be next to it dying back this year. So in the spring, when 5 of them came up, I dug at the spot where the 6th one should have, and there were roots there, but they were hard and dry and dormant, not mushy or anything. And the dieback starts as like leaf wilting that turns brown, and then the brown moves down the stem. And at this point of the year, it's about one-third dead stems, one-third wilting, and one-third that looked just perfectly normal, but that's what happened to the one last year. So I'm wondering what's going on.
I'm not sure. my first thought would be maybe it's not the best planting site, and I might consider maybe moving them to a different location. That would be my inclination because peonies are extremely long-lived. They're very reliable. We don't see too many problems with them at all. So I wonder if the site is maybe not very favorable, and I would consider moving them to a different site.
Is there some, as far as sun goes, I think they're in a great site. And they're, like I say, they're along the edge of the garden. And on one side is grass, and on the other side is annuals that I move around from year to year. So is there a way a soil problem, deficiency?
Well, not a deficiency. I wonder about maybe soil drainage or soil structure, okay. That type of thing, which may be a problem. And
okay.
So I might consider moving them.
Okay.
If there is something in the soil, maybe moving them would be a good thing to do.
Okay. And, well, I tried to look up some stuff, and I really have never had any trouble with peonies before, and I couldn't find anything about it. So.
Right, and right now is a good time to move them if you wish to do so. In fact, what you could do is, if these are nice, healthy plants, you could dig them up, and you can divide them and put some in other locations just to make sure if some of these do die.
Okay. I think I'll start with the one that's dying off.
All right, Larry.
Split it up into good and bad.
Thanks a lot for your call, Larry. And let's try to squeeze in one more call before the end of the hour. Phyllis is on the line in Davenport. Hi, Phyllis.
Hi. I'm wondering, after listening to the discussion about treatment of ash trees, is this systemic treatment something that can cause problems with bees?
You know, that's a good question. Fortunately, ash is wind pollinated, and also fortunately, they're out and the flowers are out in such an early time that the bees are not really attracted to them, and maybe even out before the bees are out and about. But the bees are more interested that time of year in the dandelions and other flowering, showy flowers. So there have been some reports from Purdue especially about this, and if you want to get on the internet and just use your search engine to find keywords like emerald ash borer and treatments affecting bees, you could pull up the publication to read about it.
All right, Phyllis, that's a great question. And one more email question. This is from Paul in Des Moines. I have a 70-foot-long stand of yews on the south side of my house that I'd like to cut from their current 12 feet down to 8 feet. Is this a good time to trim yews, and is it best to cut by hand, or can I use a hedge trimmer? That sounds like a big project.
It does, and I'd probably do that in April, early April. And if you do that, you're going to have basically just sticks left. And so they can recover. It may take a couple years, but I would try that in early April.
All right. Richard Geron, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Geron and Mark Schauer, thank you.
Thank you, Charity.
Mark Schauer, pest management expert for Iowa State University Extension. We'll be back with Horticulture Day, of course, next Friday. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. We had technical support today from Sean McLean in Ames. You can send us email anytime if you would like to respond to something you've heard on the show, if you'd like to suggest something you'd like to hear on the show. We would love to hear from you. Talk of Iowa at iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up Monday on the show, as the weather gets cooler and the leaves begin to change, we're going to talk about fall travel in Iowa with travel writer Jennifer Wilson. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.